So you've had it with the rat race and feel you've just got to get away? We'll arrange an escape for 2 or 3 months far from everything snowed in at an isolated cabin in Montana's Yaak Valley, or if you prefer heat, on a desert island. What would you need to maintain your sanity? Well, we'll supply you with plenty of food, of course, a dictionary, a Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, and the tools of your trade. But what else must you have? Hello, I'm Leonard Lopate, and each week I'll be talking with guests about what they would take in their survival kit. Olympia Dukakis says that defying definition has been one of the main themes of her life. Perhaps you think of her as feisty Rose Castorini in the film Moonstruck, the role which earned her an Oscar, or Clarie, the Southern widow from Steel Magnolias, or the transsexual landlady Anna Madrigal in the television series Tales of the City. But this complex woman has played many other roles in her life. She worked as a physical therapist during the polio epidemic of the 1950s. She's founded several theater companies, and she's been active as a political campaigner and an advocate for women's issues. So let's find out what she's got on her survival kit. Hi, Olympia.
Hi.
The first item on your list will come as a surprise, I'm sure, to everyone. The music of George Jones, who many people consider, along with Hank Williams, to be the greatest country singer of all time.
Yes.
Well, what is it about George Jones? Do you like all of country music or just George Jones?
I like country music, but very specifically, I like George Jones.
Any particular favorite songs?
Oh, so many. I Love You as much in Texas as I did in Tennessee. The ones with the duets that he did with his wife.
With Tammy Wynette.
Yeah, with Tammy Wynette. What's the one? If I could bottle this up, I'd make a million. Oh, this just goes on and on and on.
Well, let's listen to one of them.
Oh, okay. What have you got?
There's not any mountain too rugged to climb, no desert too barren to crawl. Somewhere, if you would just show a sign of love, I could bear any loss. Take me to Siberia in the coldest weather of the winter time, and it would be just like spring in California, as long as I knew you were mine.
So what is it about his music that you like in particular? His voice, which is really unusual and distinctive, or the lyrics?
Well, the lyrics, of course, what he writes about, but then the way he sings them has such immediacy and such feeling and such a knowing of what he's singing about. You feel like he knows what it is.
Do you think that's because he lived such a difficult life? He had problems with alcohol. He had a troubled marriage to Tammy Wynette. Do some people have to actually experience the pain to be better artists, do you think?
I think he's very honest. I don't think he can do sing a dishonest note, and one that's not authentic to him. And I admire that. I think he's incredibly talented and gifted.
Are you surprised that most of the country music stations today don't play much George Jones?
No, because things are, you know, have their season and their times, and a lot of country music today is very eager to cross over, and whereas George Jones, Hank Williams, they're not worried about crossing over. I mean, when you have that kind of depth. The idea of crossing over is silly. It's like he's already there. He doesn't have to cross over to anything.
But all artists have to think about this, sustaining their careers. I'm sure you've had to think about it more than once or twice during your life. Should I take this role? Should I take that role?
Right. And I do take things that I sometimes regret, you know. But I do get a chance to do things that I really like. And one of them, of course, is The Intended.
The Intended is a film in which you play someone in an outpost in, I imagine it's Burma or Thailand.
Actually, we were in Sarawak, which is a province of Malaysia that is located in the northern part of the landmass known as Borneo.
Well, yeah. Was location important for you in country music? Did you discover it while you were working in the South as a physical therapist in the 1950s?
That is very interesting. Yes, the first time I really heard country music was on my, you know, I never thought of that, but that was the first time in West Virginia. Mom at West Virginia. And that was what was on the radio all the time.
Was there a lot of culture shock involved when you went to West Virginia?
Yeah.
I'm sure that the whole Southern culture must have been quite different from what you'd grown up
with. Oh, yes. The
Boston.
Food was very different. The listening to the people, trying to understand them. Words were very... A paper bag was a poke.
Well, you were working then with polio victims. Did you... Mm-hmm. Think about an acting career at that time?
No. I tell you what I was thinking about. I was thinking about going back to college as a directing major. And I was working during the polio epidemics to earn money to go back.
At the same time, you were doing something that you must have felt was really worthwhile.
I don't know. I hadn't put it together. It was my plan about getting back to school, and I was good in the sciences and whatever. And then I met up with people who were dying, people who were crippled, families that were thrown into tragedies. It was, people say to me, well, what did you learn? I learned about suffering. I saw mothers and fathers on their knees, praying, crying. It was an eye-opener for me, and I became really ashamed of myself, to be honest with you. And I changed as a result of it. I changed the way I worked and how I presented myself. It
taught you empathy.
And yes, and responsibility. I hadn't seen death before. I hadn't seen suffering like that before.
Well, to be a good actor, don't you have to be able to put yourself into other people's heads?
Well, I guess that was the beginning.
I'm Leonard Lopate talking to Olympia Dukakis, and she is sharing her survival kit with us. Next, you wanted a book called Civilization of the Goddess by Maria Gimbutas.
Right.
Now, I've never heard of her. Mm. Who is she?
She is an archaeomythologist. She put together a construct and an understanding of that time and the change in the paradigm from a matrifocal and matrilineal society to a patriarchal society.
Now, this still remains controversial. Not everyone
believes
that societies were once matriarchal and harmonic and only became warlike when men took over.
She never said that they were matriarchal. She said they were matrifocal and mm-hmm. matrilineal. In other words, the ownership of things passed from the mother to the daughter. And they know that they were not warlike because there were no armaments buried, as they were later in the Bronze Age when the weapons were.
No. The most obvious response from some critics is, how do you explain Margaret Thatcher or Condoleezza Rice? Are they exceptions to the rule?
No, they are women who understood what is out there and wanted to succeed in that arena and learned how to function in a specific way. They learned how to handle themselves in that male world, as many women, many, many women do. They don't have to become Margaret Thatcher's.
The next item on your list is a goddess of a different sort. You wanted a video of Maria Callas's Paris concert.
Yeah.
Are you an opera lover?
I am. And certainly there are voices that have moved me tremendously, and hers is one of them. And when you watch her in concert, I did get a chance to see her in Tosca. But in this particular concert, watching her, she sings the whole thing with her hands crossed on her chest at her heart level. And I'm sure there's some focus there she has musically for herself, but it's also her heart chakra. And it's,
to some degree, she is like George Jones in that you hear a lot of emotion in her voice. It's not just the classically beautiful operatic
right.
soprano. Do you think that resonates more with you than the fact that Callas was Greek? Or is that a factor as well?
Well, I think that she was Greek does resonate for me, absolutely. And that her greatest yearning was to fulfill herself as a woman. You know, there was a lot about her that I found moving. And
do you have certain things that you particularly liked, or certain things that she sang that you'd like to hear right now?
Visi d'arte, visi d'amore. I think that's, which is so true of her. I mean, that was so true of her.
So visi d'amore from Tosca.
Tosca.
Okay. Right. Let's hear it now.
There's something in Callas's voice that stirs my own feelings, awakens feelings in me, images and memories, and my own humanness comes forward somehow.
Well, audiences loved her, although critics were often mixed about her.
Yeah.
And maybe the important thing is to connect with the audience and not worry about the critics.
Yeah, well, I don't even read the critics anymore, so there you go.
Really? You get generally good reviews, don't you?
Well, that's nice to hear. I do things I tell people. I don't talk about the reviews. If you do a play, you can tell pretty easily whether or not the reviews. It depends, the audience instantly. The audience will come, and they'll be applauding and standing and cheering and blah, blah, blah. And the reviews come out, and they're not good, and the audience is very quiet. They're not sure of themselves. Then a week later, it all reverses and they start claiming it again.
My guest is Olympia Dukakis, and she's sharing her survival kit with us. I'm Leonard Lopate. You also asked for some poetry by the Polish poet Anne Kamieńska.
Yeah.
So when did you first come across her work?
Oh, about 2 years ago.
Had you always liked poetry?
Oh, yes. Always, always. I carry one of hers around with me. Actually, I don't have one today because I didn't bring. But in my appointment book, I carry one of her poems around with me all the time.
Well, one of her most famous poems, A Prayer That Will Be Answered, begins, "Lord, let me suffer much and then die." Is that something anyone would actually wish for?
You have to finish reading it. That isn't enough. Go ahead, read the rest of it.
Well, that's the only line that I've written down.
You don't have the rest of it. She understands. You know, the thing that we all try to avoid is suffering. And yet if you don't accept that that's a reality in life. You can't really live your life. So I think it's about living. It's about embracing that to live, because that's part of living. And then she goes on to talk about, let the grass be green so someone can shout out their love, press their face into the earth and shout out their love. And let her poem remain like a glass that a bumblebee bumps his head against. I don't know it verbatim.
That's pretty good.
That is an incredible image. That is incredible image, that bumblebee.
Do you feel that difficult experiences have made you a better actor? Accepting
only
the pain
to the
that's inherent in living?
You can't process or access what you cannot imagine or haven't experienced. You can do things through imagination. You don't have to have experienced everything.
You ask for a number of films. In fact, you cheated and put down as one item videos of films by De Sica, Fellini, Kurosawa, Bergman, Truffaut. So was it just too hard to decide on one or two films to take along?
Yes. And at first I was going to put down Miracle of Milan. I think that's probably my favorite film of all time. It just has everything in it, and it's a surprise all the time, every time I see it. But De Sica, anything by De Sica. Is he on the list too?
Yes.
I put De Sica in? Yeah.
The first name on the list.
De Sica, yeah.
These are all foreign films, Italian, French, Japanese, and Swedish.
Yeah.
Do you prefer them to Hollywood films?
Not really. If they're a good Hollywood, if they're good, and there have been some great American films, of course.
We've had our share.
The Raging Bull is a great film.
Martin Scorsese, he's the equivalent of an international artist.
Raging Bull, Goodfellas. But something I'd want to look at again and again and again. See, that's what the list is about. Something you can go back to again and again and again. Has to have an overview, something.
You have written about the early years of your marriage to Louis Zurich,
mm-hmm.
and how you went to foreign films often. He's also an actor. So were they just film experiences, or were they also opportunities to discuss the art of acting?
We used to go to the Apollo on 42nd Street.
This is a theater that used to show films very low price.
Like 25 cents or something.
They had just been at the first run theaters, and they'd had their run, and then the Apollo would put two or three together.
Yeah.
And you could see every great foreign
film. And then we'd go across the street to Grant's and have a hot dog and a beer, and go back, and we'd always go to double bills. I mean, in those days, going to the movies meant going to a double bill.
So when you went to those films, did you see performances that made you change your mind about acting?
Oh, Jean Moreau and Jules et Jim. Simone Signoret, A Room with a View. I'm thinking of now mostly women.
But why not? You were an actor who was thinking about how you might play those roles.
Jean Gabin. And then, of course, there were all the movies out of Pinewood, the British movies, the comedies. That was so great. Terry Thomas. Oh, do you remember Terry Thomas?
I do, with the gap between
the feet. Oh, my God, what a wonderful actor.
But except for Bergman, all the people you're talking about are dead. So does that mean that films aren't as good as far as you're concerned these days? What about some of the great young directors, foreign directors like Abbas Kiarostami or Wong Kar-wai, or Pedro Almodovar. Do you like them as well?
Oh, I love Almodovar.
Well, in the 60s and 70s, people who considered themselves culturally aware made a point of seeing foreign films when they came out. Now, some theaters won't even show a film if it has subtitles.
But there was a revolution that happened. I mean, it changed filmmaking. What happened in Europe changed. I mean, it was a progression after the Second World War, especially in Italy, where they had neorealism and stuff. But it just exploded, and really made a difference for Americans as a result of that. The films began to change here and it affected American filmmaking.
So when you receive a script, do you think along those lines or do you just think about it as something that you'd like to do? Do you think about the timelessness of a project you might be involved with?
Well, of course, you read it. I've had a couple of films that I feel have a sense of timelessness in them. I think Moonstruck has that. I think it's a film you can see again and again. Steel Magnolia seems to have it. People want to see it again and again and again. I know people have seen it 28 times. Tales of the City, I think, for a particular population has a feeling of that. For the gay community, I think it has that. But
it also gave you an opportunity to work with one of the best actors in the world right now, Laura Linney.
Ah, absolutely.
So how important is that to you, whether the film is a masterpiece or not? I'll bet you come away with from some work experiences thinking, boy, that was so incredible. I got to work with so-and-so, a person I've always wanted to work with.
About a person.
Director.
A director. Norman Jewison in Moonstruck, Alistair Reed, Tales of the City.
I'm talking to Olympia Dukakis, and she's sharing her survival kit with us. I'm Leonard Lopate. You wanted a sketch pad and pencils. Do you like to draw?
I do.
Do you sketch from nature? Do portraits?
No.
Do you doodle? Do you do abstract work?
Yeah, I sketch from images that I have.
So this is something separate from the other aspects of the arts you're involved with.
Yes. It's very connected with prehistory and a lot of the images that I have looked at and absorbed, artifacts, etc.
You would not then want to draw just on a practical level. For example, when you acted as the artistic director for a theater company, you would not have imagined designing sets or costumes for a production?
Well, interestingly enough, I was very involved in the design of sets and costumes when I was running the whole theater. All of that was finally my responsibility and subject to my approval, quite frankly. So I was always, I love the visual part of theater. When you come out of the rehearsal room and hit the stage and I would love that face of it. Finally get away from the actors and just sit there and you don't have to negotiate with a light, you know what I mean? You place it, you do this to it, you gel it.
And I think the best performances, the best direction often uses the whole stage and gives us some sense of spectacle, even if it's an intimate drama. There's something always visual about it.
That's a nice way to put it, yeah.
When you do these works that draw from your subconscious, do you learn anything from it?
Yes. I learn what's there.
What you didn't know was there,
yeah,
but is there?
What's there? What connects me?
Is that why you also like to write? Because you ask for notebooks for writing.
Yes, right. The same thing, right?
You've already published a memoir.
Yeah.
Did you learn from that experience?
Oh, did I? Woo! That was one hard thing to do.
Well, talking about themes, the last request was all of Gustav Mahler's symphonies.
Yeah.
Probably a composer who created more themes than anybody. Perhaps if you had all of those symphonies, you wouldn't have to put anything else on the CD player because they run very long.
Yeah.
We have a number of options for you. We have Leonard Bernstein conducting the New York Philharmonic. We can hear the last movement of Symphony No. 6 in A minor, the Tragic, or the
yes.
last movement of the Symphony No. 1 in D major, the Titan.
The sixth might be.
Well, let's listen. Mahler liked to do things like beginning a symphony in one key and then ending it in another, practices that were frowned on by his contemporaries. Right. He liked to say, "My time will yet come." Do you think
he was right about that, wasn't he?
And his time did come.
Yes.
What do you think about your list? What do you think it tells us about you? It's quite diverse. Country music, opera, symphonies, mythology, poetry, foreign films. Do you think this is another example of you still trying to defy definition?
I don't know that I would say defy. It's just my, I mean, when I was younger, I would use the word defy. Now it feels like I just kind of insist on it.
But it is more international than, and more eclectic than most Americans would come up with. You do have George Jones, but then you have a Lithuanian writer, you have a Polish poet, you have an Austrian composer, you have a Greek opera singer, and then you have Italian, Japanese, Swedish, and French filmmakers.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Does it kind of nail me in terms of the time I've lived in?
Growing up in a time when Americans were much more aware of what was going on around the world.
Yes, and much more eager to know and learn and hear and that kind of stuff.
Olympia Dukakis, thank you so much for sharing your survival kit with us. It's been a lot of fun.
It was fun. What a fun way to do an interview.
Survival Kit was produced by Melissa Egan with Eileen Delahunty and Barbara Kahn. George Edwards was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Survival Kit is a production of WNYC New York Public Radio. Thanks for listening.